You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily podcast on the Minnesota Timberwolves, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, your host here, Colt Molesky, bringing you Timberwolves content. Make sure to check out the Locked On Timberwolves.com website for prior podcasts. Probably have some written content going back up there as the season gets closer as well. Today, we are going to be breaking down. Oh, also check out, before I get ahead of myself, also check out my Twitter account and the Locked On Timberwolves Twitter account at Locked On T-Wolves, and my Twitter account is at CMMolesky, M-O-L-E-S-K-Y. All right, so today, we're going into ridiculous expectations. And for this podcast, I have the Blue Hardwood podcast host, Brian, on. He's been on many podcasts with me before. We've done a lot of collaboration podcasts, did a ton of draft coverage together. Brian is always welcome on the podcast, and it's good to have you on today.
I'm honored / humbled. Thank you for having me, Colt. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. This one was kind of a spontaneous podcast. I was thinking about, I knew I wanted to do a show today because I hadn't gotten too much content out this week, but I knew I wanted to do a show today, one of the rare Saturday podcasts, and I was thinking about topics, running over a couple of things, and we were kind of texting a little back and forth, and I thought, ridiculous expectations, and we're going to be talking about the Minnesota Timberwolves. Here are the three things that I am expecting that a lot of people will probably say are outside the realm of possibility. I'm going to get through all three of them real quick, and then you can give me your reactions to them, Brian. The first thing, I'm expecting Karl Anthony Towns to be in competition for the Defensive Player of the Year. Not to be the Defensive Player of the Year, but he's one of the top three finalists for Defensive okay. Player of the Year next year. The next thing is a stat line from Josh Okogie, something like this. I expect him to average right around that 9.5, 10 points per game. I expect him to average right around a 35% three-point shooting throughout the season, average 35% from three-point range. And going into some advanced stats here, I'm expecting his steal percentage to be right around 2 to 1.9, right about on that 2% steal percentage rate, and his usage rate to actually go up right around that 21%. I think that a lot of possessions you see early on, he's going to be involved in a lot of possessions. I hope, because he's getting a lot of work, and I think that you see him affect the steal percentage of this team. The last thing that I'm expecting, you saw this year, it was a kind of a theme all season long, but you look at the guys who are no longer a part of this team, off the bench at least, Crawford, Bielitsa, they average about 20 minutes per game. Everyone that still remains on this team, Tyus Jones, Gorgui Dieng, Derrick Rose, guys that you expect to have a role in this team coming off the bench, those guys were all under 18 minutes per game. You had Tyus Jones at just over 17, Gorgui at just over 16, and Derrick Rose at 12 minutes per game. I expect those numbers to rise this season, especially early on in the year. They're going to be testing out their bench, seeing what they have on the bench, seeing what they have from these young guys. Guys who are not stars are going to get bigger minutes. Obviously, all of these things are going to take some growth for this team to accomplish, but what do you think of those stat lines and those ridiculous expectations?
I mean, I think your two and three are not – I don't think they're actually that crazy. Let's talk about Towns. So right now, just kind of looking at some information as far as voting stats that, you know, went last year. So your top three in votes, Gobert, Embiid, Davis. So let me ask you, which of those does Cat bump in the potential top three voting?
That's an excellent question. I think that It's gotta be Embiid, right? And it's gotta be Embiid because Gobert is going to stay focused on defense. The Jazz are going to stay focused on front court defense. They're kind of in the same line as where you see the Oklahoma City Thunder headed a little bit, where they're just going to go super hard-nosed front court defense. And because they don't have a backcourt to match what teams like the Warriors, the Rockets have, that's how they're going to try and off-kilter those really good teams, is by throwing a front court that they just can't match at them. So I think Gobert is going to stay in that lane. And I think you're going to see that from the Pelicans as well. That's kind of the way they have to contend with those teams. So I think you see Davis there as well. Embiid is somebody, the Eastern Conference is pretty wide open, and I don't think Philly has to worry about a playoff spot. And now I think you see their offense try and grow and meld a little bit. I think you see Embiid do some different things offensively. I think they want to try and grow Ben Simmons. You got guys like Zaire Smith. You want to see him and how he plays in this offense. Marco Fultz, we don't really know how he's going to fit into the offense because you didn't really see him too much last year. But you know from the games he played, he was getting triple doubles and such. You know he can contribute in a bunch of different ways. And if he's fixed that shot, that's another layer that he offers. So I think Embiid is kind of the most likely guy while they're figuring all this offensive stuff out. Maybe he takes a step back defensively. Now, it could go the other way where he just is really empowered to work on things defensively because that's not the thing in flux. But maybe you see Embiid take a step back defensively as you see some things around the Philadelphia 76ers shift. That's where I see Towns. The thing is that if Towns comes out, and I was talking about this the other day, kind of looking at their schedule now that's been released, they play a bunch of teams with strong front courts early on in the season. You see them play San Antonio. You see them play the Blazers, who have that versatile front court where they can throw a bunch of guys at the Timberwolves front court. You see them playing OKC. All in the first month and a half of the season, you're going to have Towns. They play the Jazz. Towns is going to be tested early on in the season, and if he can come out strong and come out playing not only offensively but defensively really solid off the glass, they're playing the Pelicans. I mean, all these teams, if he can come out strong against so many good front courts, I think that right there in the first month and a half of the season, he's on everybody's radars. Whoa, something's different about Towns on both ends of the glass. He's playing more aggressive. He's playing like that stretch that Butler was out at the end of the season where he just really wants to own the court, and he really wants to own every possession that he's a part of. And if he comes out like that, I think that'll put him on people's radars early. And I think that the schedule is set up as such where he can really make a strong case for himself as a defensive player of the year right away from the jump.
No, I completely agree. I like those takes. Something else to add in the Embiid pot, so to speak, not to say I wish, you know, this is, you know, him bad health, but his health. Into taking question. I mean, obviously this was the most games he played this season, but he still obviously missed some time with the was it broken nose? Like, was it orbital bone or is it nose? I forget.
I believe it was his nose, yeah, with the face mask that he had to wear.
Right. And then like you said, with there's a lot of different transitions, you know, moving forward to see how they add Zaire Smith. And then maybe he's gonna focus more on offense. I could see that just because I think in him as a player, I think a lot of people think he's not a good offensive player. So I think a part of his, I don't want to say ego, but he wants to almost prove those people wrong and say, hey, I can shoot, you know, 50% from the three, or, you know, as a big man, and just progress his offensive game like that. I don't see that being out of the question. As far as Cat taking his spot, I like what you picked there for sure. You know, everything else, you know, I really don't think that's the craziest thing, but that one right there. And just a side note, if Towns does have this engine where he's like the third, you know, he's a top three defensive player all year, do you think that helps Butler staying? I know that we're getting off the topic just a smidge, but do you think that his topic a little bit where these, where he thinks these young guys don't care?
Absolutely, because you can't go from having your defense criticized for at least half the season to going to a defensive player that you're finalist without putting in a bunch of effort and a bunch of work that's not seen on the court, a bunch of work in practices, a bunch of workout, private workouts that you're doing. All that takes a lot of work, and so him making that jump would prove how much skin he has in the game, how much skin he has with the Timberwolves organization, getting them better as well as getting himself better. I think that would say a lot. And really, even if he isn't a finalist for Defensive Player of the Year, but if he is markedly better on defense, I think that still speaks to what he's doing off the court, which would definitely put a lot of minds at ease in Minnesota and would kind of answer the challenge that Butler has kind of thrown out there for Towns to pick up. And if you're a young guy and seen by a lot of people in the league as a star, as I think Towns is, I think that when you have somebody challenge you, especially when it's a teammate, your response should be to kind of get better, and being a better player is the way you throw that back in his face and prove them wrong. And so I think how he responds to this last summer will tell you a lot about Towns and how he handles himself as a professional. Just quick on Josh Okogie, the stat line is very specific because those numbers are kind of right in and around Paul George's rookie year. And I think that if you can see, I'm not saying that he'll be the next Paul George, even if he does get those stats, but if you see him do that in his first year, then I think there's a chance you can see him. He is already on the proper trajectory for maybe a Paul George light, something like that, where he is he's recognizing that he can really make his mark by being a good three-point shooter and a defensive specialist. And that's what you saw from Paul George in that first season. And so his totals from his first season, he had a steal percentage of 2.5. He had a 7.8 points per game. He shot 29% from three-point range when he was only given about two opportunities per game from three-point range. But you see, if Josh Okogie can kind of get right around those numbers and maybe even a little more opportunity, as Paul George was only started in 19 games, if maybe they give him maybe not starts but more minutes in that first 2 months, the Timberwolves, for Josh, I think maybe you can see those numbers take a little bit of a bump, and maybe he's on the proper trajectory, and you can tell he's kind of making the right moves, being in the right spot, taking the right steps. Hopefully that's some of the stuff that pans out in the stat sheet.
And the bigger question, I guess, with Josh is, will he crack the dreaded Tibbs top five, top six, getting playing time this season?
Well, I mean, the two guys off the bench who got the most minutes are gone. So there's definitely minutes to be had. I think the more important question is, are those going to go to two guys or the two next guys up, like a Tyus Jones and Derrick Rose, something like that? Mm-hmm. Or is he going to spread around those minutes? And I think I think that's the most ridiculous expectation I have, honestly, is that Tibbs is going to look at how things went last year and say, I need to be more creative in the first 2 months with my roster to figure out what I actually have from these young guys, and I need to expand my lineup from like six guys to I honestly think they have eight guys that you could experiment and play and expect some good things from night in and night out. And so I think that's the most ridiculous expectation I have, is that he's going to actually spread around the minutes more and get more creative with his lineups. But that's just me.
Expecting change from Tibbs and not having Gibson play 35 minutes a game at almost like, how old is Taj now? Almost like 35.
Yeah.
Crazy.
It is. We're going to get to a quick break for some sponsors. And then after that, we are going to do three ridiculous expectations for the NBA in general. First, some sponsors. All right, so we covered the Timberwolves and three ridiculous expectations for them. Now, the NBA. Brian, I want to hear your thoughts. What are three expectations you have that might be considered ridiculous for this NBA season in general? Just throw them to me quick, and then I'll react to them.
Chicago Bulls making the playoffs. Go.
I love this one. I love the faith in Zach LaVine. I actually do think that they have an underrated roster. I really like Wendell Carter Jr. a lot, and I think that he will be a really nice fit with Markkanen and with Zach LaVine. I think that they have the right amount of guys who don't need the basketball in their hand, with guys like Zach LaVine that definitely do need to get a lot of possessions to be effective in a basketball game. But I think maybe – this year, if you see, I think Wendell Carter is going to be a good defender. If you see Markkanen step up his defense, play more aggressively on the boards, guys like Chris Dunn, I think, if he can stay healthy and kind of direct the offense, I think they actually will have a pretty good team. I'm not sure if they'll make the playoffs, but I don't think this one is as far off as it sounds when you think about the Bulls from last year, because I think the teams from last year this year will be very different.
And the East is terrible, so you have to take that in consideration as well.
Those last four spots are wide open in the playoffs. Yes,
exactly. All right, number two, Trae Young, Rookie of the Year.
This one I can't get on board with. I'm sorry. I can't get behind it. Come on. I think that the Atlanta Hawks are going to be a dumpster fire for the most part.
Exactly. That's my point, because especially since they finally moved Dennis Schroeder, the points are going to be there where he can get it. So why not?
That's the thing is that, and this is coming from a guy who, this was my argument the other year for Dennis Smith Jr. as Rookie of the Year. Right. Because he was going to be on a bad team. He was going to let, and obviously he had some injuries and such, and he was not as, he was not as good as people were hoping his rookie year. But my philosophy was Dallas is a really bad team. He's going to get plenty of opportunity to take a lot of reps, take a lot of shots, make a lot of highlights, and people are going to see him on SportsCenter every night making some crazy windmill dunk over somebody in a game, and he's going to kind of catch fire. I don't think it's enough to be crazy good on a bad team, and I don't even know if he's going to be crazy good.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to get that chance. People have him on that ridiculous potential of, hey, he could be the next Curry, except he's a better passer. You know, obviously he definitely ran out of gas towards the middle part of Oklahoma season last year, just because teams were just like, okay, like if we just guard this guy, then we should be able to beat him. And then, you know, even though he would be, you know, hit that 40, 45 points, the shooting volume was not very good. I think it was almost like he would take like 50 shots to get 40 points. It was not good. But I just, to me, the volume of points and opportunity is going to be there. And then for the award, not necessarily like the best like prospect per se wins the award, just to kind of go through some previous, 2016, 2017, Malcolm Brogdon. And then, you know, this could be a weird year where maybe somebody like this could be a Michael Carter Williams year, Colt. You never know.
That's true. I would like to say, just in defense of the Malcolm Brogdon, Ben Simmons probably should have won that one. He was just injured. That was kind of like the, we all thought we were going to be giving this to Ben Simmons. So here you go, Malcolm Brogdon. He did play well. He wasn't a Rookie of the Year like Donovan Mitchell. He was a great Rookie of the Year candidate. He wasn't that kind of like caliber of candidate. I just can't get behind Trae Young, just because this is going to be such an awful team. And we've seen what it does to some guys who get compared to Steph Curry at Buddy Hield. I think the problem with thinking that the Warriors are changing the game and making everybody take more threes is assuming that because of that, a byproduct will be somebody as good as Steph Curry will come along. When really, nobody's going to be as good as Steph Curry, because he's an all-time shooter, and just the way he shoots the ball, he will be an all-time great, and I don't think anybody can approach that just because we're taking more threes now. What's your last ridiculous expectation for the NBA season?
I'm going to change it up a little bit. So I think ridiculous expectation is, I think Kawhi will be a top three in MVP final voting.
I like it. So you're saying that he is going to really fit in well with Toronto right off the bat?
I think he's going to fit in, and I think he's actually going to, you know, he has to come. I don't want to say he has to come and actually play, but, you know, wherever he decides to go next year, whether it be a foregone conclusion, he's in LA, teams still need to see he can play. He's actually been off a year, so. And, you know, within the playing a lot of opponents in the East, I mean, other than maybe looking at Boston and then maybe Philadelphia, like who else? There's going to be a lot of easy wins there. And then obviously, you know, Toronto swung for the fences and they traded their guy for Kawhi. So they're just like, here you go, man. Here's your show. So whether it's either going to be, I don't think it's really going to be any middle ground. I think it's either going to be a freaking disaster or it's going to be a blaze of glory. Like, though, it's not going to be any, it's not going to be a happy medium. I think it's going to go really good or it's going to be a shit show.
Side note, if Kawhi actually is healthy, this is like the best thing that's happened to OG Anunoby. Getting a Kawhi level defender to take the number one guy now. He's right. Going to be able to just destroy a lot of second tier offensive players.
That'll be fun. I didn't even think about that. Interesting. Ooh, OG.
This kind of leads well into mine as well, because the first one I wanted to bring up for my three ridiculous expectations for the NBA is that the Indiana Pacers are going to be the third seed in the East. I think it's going to be Boston and then whoever you want in number two, whether you think Toronto is going to really work out, whether you think that Philly is going to be really dominant. I think there's going to be a two seed between those two teams, and then Indiana is going to be the third seed. I don't think it's going to be Toronto. I don't think it's going to be Philly. I think they're either going to be the second seed or the fourth seed. I think that Indiana is going to be locked right into the third seed, chomping at the heels of the two seed. Victor Oladipo, looked really good last year, and obviously proved that by getting the most improved player of the year. And then they bring in Tyreek Evans. I really love Aaron Holiday as a backup point guard for that second unit. They have Miles Turner on this team. If he can be healthy, he's probably one of the best front court players in the East behind Embiid. I really like this team, and I think quietly they got better with their second unit while everybody else kind of worried about trying to get Kawhi.
Fair. I don't, as far as ridiculous, I don't think that's like completely out of the question. I mean, they pushed LeBron to seven games, and they probably should have won that series. So if LeBron was not LeBron, I think they win that series. So no, I know this is supposed to be like a cold pizza type situation, but I agree. I like it. All right, what's your next one?
OKC is the two seed next year. I think that the Rockets take a step back. I think that having Melo on that team is not going to be good. I think that's really hard when you are right there with 65 wins, right there to beating the almost perennial champions and losing after that just cold shooting streak that they had in the fourth quarter. I think that that's going to be hard to bounce back from at the beginning of the season. I think that OKC looks really good with the Nerlens Noel signing, bringing Schroeder in for the second team. I like the things they're doing. I like having a really big front court to combat the Rockets and the Warriors and throw big guys at them and just say, you know what, you can go really small, but we're going to really destroy you on the glass with these guys, and there's not going to be much you can do about it, so we're going to go back and forth this way. And then when you want to pick up the pace, we have Russell Westbrook, who just loves to run up and down a basketball court for days and days, months and months, years and years, and never get tired. And I like that mix that they have. Obviously, it can backfire, and you have just Russell Westbrook dropping 40 shots a game, and that might mess some of it up. But I think that this is a really good team, and every stat points to Paul George and Russell Westbrook being better on the floor together when Carmelo was off it from last season, and they're retaining Paul George. And so they had a great summer, and I think they're going to be a really good team, and I think they're going to snag that two seed. And it's going to be Warriors Thunder.
So you're thinking from where they finished last year, you know, from that gaggle of 3-8, there was like 2-game difference. So OKC was at 48-34. So you think right now, currently constructed, they're a plus 12, plus 14?
Yeah, well, I think they could probably be a plus 10. Mm-hmm. And I think that the difference is about as close as it was last year, where you have a two seed that's separated from the fifth seed by like 2 games. But right. I think that they just pull ahead of teams, because I'm not saying the Rockets fall off the face of the earth, but if they lose like 7 more games, mm-hmm. that's a huge difference when your three seed was, what were the Blazers, 3 games away from being a 9 seed? Like,
essentially, right.
It's crazy how close it was last year, and we added more talent into the West over the offseason. And so I don't think it's crazy to think a team that kept a superstar, got rid of somebody who probably was holding them back in Carmelo Anthony, and added another guy who, while he's had his problems is still a really good front court piece and could be a great defensive piece, along with getting the guy they put so much money into last offseason, Roberson. They're getting that defensive piece back as well. You still have Steven Adams in that front court. I think that those three guys, with Paul George as your best defender ahead of those three guys, now you have a really great defense, and you still have Russell Westbrook, who, while you can have your reservations about him, he's still a really awesome NBA player, and he can do a ton of things in the fourth quarter of a game to really save this team. And I think you have Paul George coming back. I think he'll get more shots now that Carmelo Anthony is gone. I just like the way everything is set up to make it so that their defense can kind of compensate for maybe some of the setbacks on their offense.
Right on. So we're going to position this as, right now, with this hot take, it's the butterfly effect, but we're going to call it the Melo effect. So it's going to get better because they're getting rid of the dead body of Carmelo and his defense, and they're sending him to Houston, where they're going to have to deal with his terrible defense. I don't think it's – it's just really hard to say right now, just because, you know, I need to see more volume before I can see OKC separating themselves from that gaggle of, like, that 3-2 potentially 10 teams, like, that almost have identical records that they do. It's insane. You know, Westbrook's great. You know, Paul George, you know, is still, you know, that upper tier type of player. I like the addition of Schroeder. I wouldn't be surprised, just, you know, and maybe another hot take, he could be maybe in the running for sixth man of the year. I wouldn't be surprised about that at all. Like, is he the best backup point guard OKC has ever had?
He might very well be, but to be fair, one of their backups was Reggie Jackson, who had, like, one great playoff highlight, but then he had one great playoff moment against, I think it was the Grizzlies, where he had, like, 30 points in a playoff game to kind of save a game for the Thunder, but that was buried under years of mediocre seasons.
Right. I would say, I think right now, I'll say no to this one. I could see Houston maybe not winning, maybe being right at 58-60, but I think OKC is probably maybe close, like, nipping at their heels. It's close, but I don't think they make that crazy jump. All right, what's your last take, Colt?
This one goes head-to-head with yours. I think that John Collins out of Wake Forest is going to be the best young player on the Atlanta Hawks in his second year, which means that Trae Young then by – it is the de facto not rookie of the year if he is not the best young player on his own team. I just think that John Collins is kind of the who you want as the hybrid 2-3 guy who's going to be he's going to make a name for himself on defense, rebounding, and then in transition he is really special, rim running and getting to the basket. He kind of punctuates those kind of plays with highlight dunks, but I don't think he's just a highlight guy. I think he could be really great. The Atlanta Hawks already have started this narrative where they want to be the baby Warriors. Obviously, I think that is far-fetched, but I think if they're a team who really wants to pick up the pace, I think that somebody's going to who's going to benefit from that is John Collins, because I think in space, with how fast he is combined with his size, he can really hurt transition defenses. And so I think he is going to make a lot of hay off of that and then progress as a defensive player. So those two things, I think, will really help his stock and will really help just his production this season. And I think he is probably, at the end of the year, you look back and you say, wow, John Collins was a steal where they drafted him a couple of years ago, and he is the best young guy that they have right now because he is actually striding towards his ceiling versus where I think Trae Young will be, which he'll be kind of bogged down. I don't think that he's going to find a rhythm in this NBA season, and he's going to make a lot more great assists than great game-winning shots.
Collins is your guy. I gotta say, Cole, you stick to your guns. I admire that. Can we have one final bonus, number four? We didn't actually discuss this in the pre-show meeting. So currently constructed right now, the Lakers, I feel, have enough to make the playoffs. Would you agree?
I've been watching LeBron James go to finals since I was getting ready for my freshman year of high school, and now I'm a college graduate. So I can't even envision a world where LeBron isn't at least in the playoffs.
Okay, so right now, you go first and then I'll go. Who do you think the Lakers bump from the playoff gaggle last year of Portland, OKC, Utah, Pelicans, Spurs, and Minnesota? Who do you think they bump?
I think that probably, I think that Portland is the one that's kind of teetering.
And really?
Yeah, I think that this team has been really trying to do a good job of building through the draft, and they just haven't had the guys behind like McCollum and Damian Lillard to kind of back that. They had LaMarcus Aldridge for a minute, but they've been trying to get these big guys through the draft to really bolster their front court. And I like a lot of guys in their front court, but I just don't know if it's a strong enough front to push them past some of the other teams. Like Minnesota, if Minnesota pans out these draft picks and they have a guy like Towns in their front court along with a guy like Jimmy Butler in their backcourt, those are two all-star level players who are balancing out their basketball team. And Portland just doesn't have that kind of balance. Same with a team like the Utah Jazz. Rudy Gobert in their front court, Donovan Mitchell in their backcourt. They don't have the same kind of balance. So when push comes to shove, the Blazers are going to need Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum to shoot this team's way out of trouble. And you saw that really backfire against the Pelicans. And really, they were just able to get that 3 seed by a hair of a margin. And I just don't know if they can pull that off 2 years.
Interesting. I don't hate it. A lot of there's obviously been tension. I guess not tension, but speculation that, you know, somebody needs to go in between McCollum and Lillard. As far as, like you said, they have this awesome guard tandem, and then, you know, they have, it's really weird. They seem to really like just smaller players, because they sign a Seth Curry. They draft, you know, they got Gary Trent Jr., who was, like, awesome in the summer league. I'm not sure where he's going to get minutes. But, you know, your bigs, you've got, you know, Nurkic, who's not bad. He's not bad. And mm-hmm. then you've got players like Collins. But like you said, you know, you throw other players out there that could – Amino, and then I'm having a brain fart right now. I'm trying to think who else.
Well, that's the problem, is that I love so many guys on this Blazers team. I love Zach Collins. I really love Gary Trent. He is a Minnesota boy. I really love Gary Trent, and I think he's super underrated, like Wendell Carter was on that Duke team, kind of buried on a really great roster. I think I really love Damian Lillard. I've loved Damian Lillard for years. I really like watching CJ McCollum play. Like I really like a lot of guys on this roster, but they've just had so many problems finding consistent guys who can really own a basketball game in the front court. And meanwhile, their back court is always loaded, but they're loaded with guys who are spectacular offensive players, but then mediocre defenders.
Boom. I didn't even think about it like that. Yeah. They can score 50 apiece, but then they're essentially giving up 60 apiece on defensive end. Cause ideally, in a perfect world, from that 1-2 combo, you would like at least one to be at least a decent defender. Now, doesn't have to be spectacular, but just like, you know, a lot better than the other one, because they're probably the same level defensively. Would you agree?
No, yeah, they have if they had somebody, if Gary Trent, for whatever reason, and I'm not saying this is the way it's going to be, he's an awesome offensive piece, but I don't think he's going to help their defense too much. But if for whatever reason Gary Trent suddenly turned into and possessed the defensive ability of Klay Thompson, I think that would fix a lot of their problems, because now they have a backcourt guy who can catch and shoot off of Damian Lillard, but also get some stops on the defensive end from the backcourt. Right now it's a matter of their front court is a B-, C+. And their way out of getting away from some front courts that would beat them, like the Pelicans, is just for Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum to bludgeon you with 3-point shots. And so when they don't fall on that end, or if you're the Warriors and you can match backcourt shooting with backcourt shooting, then they don't really have an answer for it. And so that's – and this – I did a ton of study when I, this last year, obviously getting ready for each one of the Timberwolves games where they're playing these teams. When you play the Portland Trailblazers, there's a few more times because they're in the West. This was kind of the always the conclusion you got to is all that needs to happen is Towns needs to just destroy this team because a healthy Jimmy Butler can shut down a hot Damian Lillard because he's just that good defensively. And so when it comes down to it, it'd be C.J. McCollum trying to outshoot the mistakes of a front court against Towns. And you're going to have that problem a lot in the Western Conference when you're playing the Utah Jazzes, the San Antonio Spurs, the Pelicans of the West. And just combating those problems mixed with problems where you can't even defend the Warriors very well, and so you're just getting into a shooting match with the Warriors. It's just a lot of problems, and everything fell right for them last year, and I don't anticipate it happening again this year.
Do you think this is the final year of the Dame and CJ combo together?
That I honestly have no idea on, because barring, like, are you thinking that maybe one of them asked for a trade out? Or, I mean, the cap space was pretty tight this year. It's not going to be a whole lot looser next year, and there's going to be a lot of guys up for free agency next year.
Right.
Like, you got, like, Clay, Jimmy Butler, Kyrie. I mean, that free agent class is going to be pretty full. So if you're thinking that one of these guys maybe asked for an out,
mm-hmm.
I don't know what exactly they're expecting from their team to do.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, you've nailed it on the head many times. You know, if they could maybe look at getting someone that could, you know, be a okay offensive player, but then being able to cover himself on the defensive end, to me, if I had to pick from the two, I think I would keep Lillard, honestly. I think CJ's the one to go. I think he's the odd man out. And then their money, it's crazy. Their money is pretty identical. Dame's still got 3 years at 27, and CJ's got 3 years at 25.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a tight situation. We've fallen down a little bit of a Portland rabbit hole here, my friend.
Yes. my bad. No,
you're good,
that's
man.
That's what we do. That's what we do.
You're good, man.
I will lay out real quick. I will say the Lakers will bump the Spurs from making the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So just real quick, I mean, obviously there was that huge transition this season with, Kawhi. They add DeRozan. I'm not really a big fan of their roster. I mean, you're telling me based on just DeRozan and Aldridge alone that this team is going to win 50 games. And honestly, a part of me thinks with all, you know, dealing with all the Kawhi stuff and then Pop dealing with his own kind of personal demons this year, I almost feel like this year is going to just, I feel like this is going to be last year of Pop where it's almost going to be kind of like a transition year for him.
I really love, DeJounte Murray and Lonnie Walker, I think, is the steal of the draft for sure at the 18th pick where they got him. And so I actually really like this team, and I don't see them missing the playoffs. But you're definitely right where this is, like, the weirdest – they're coming off the weirdest season ever for the Spurs. Maybe one of the top five weirdest seasons for an NBA franchise just in general. So there definitely could be some shakes around there for the Spurs. We got to get out of here, man. We're – creeping up on an hour here, so we gotta get out of here. But thank you so much, Brian, for joining the show. Make sure to check out his podcast, Blue Hardwood. Thank you so much for tuning in, everyone. This is Chris Moleski on another Lockdown Wolves podcast, part of the Lockdown Podcast.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.